Do you ever wish you could fly just so you could admire the view from the top of a bridge? Moses Gates is the kind of person who makes the effort to actually explore the places most of us can only imagine from a safe distance. He knows the adrenaline rush of seeing the Manhattan skyline from the top of the Brooklyn Bridge in the middle of the night. And when he goes to Europe, the sewer mains and abandoned quarries under the streets of cities like Paris, Rome, and Odessa, that's at the top of his sightseeing list. Or maybe climbing Notre Dame Cathedral from the outside and giving in to the temptation to ring the tower bell. By day, Moses is a licensed tour guide in New York City. He's chronicled his many global adventures as part of a community of urban explorers in his page-turner of a book called Hidden Cities. Moses, glad you could join us today on Travel with Rick Steves.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Moses, your book, Hidden Cities, is just a page-turner because I've been going to a lot of these places all my life, and you uncover dimensions of these cities that I never even considered. Tell us just, for people who are new to this, what is urban exploring?
So urban exploring is really just seeing the city on your own terms. We all have our own interests, and travelers love cities. Many travelers love cities. I love big cities. And when you start to explore, you usually walk the streets, you talk to people, you go to museums, and you get a healthy sense of curiosity about the city. I think everybody knows that feeling of thinking, what's around the corner, what's behind that door, what's underneath the hole in the ground, maybe. And urban exploration is just going a little bit further to find out the answers to those questions. I don't know anybody who's been to a city who hasn't left thinking they can't see more.
And, yeah, but when you think, you know, the more you're talking, climb to the top of a bridge over the Hudson River in New York, right? I mean, share with us the rush of climbing to the very top of a bridge in New York City, for instance.
Climbing bridges is one of my favorite things to do in New York and really anywhere in the world. It's a chance to interact on a really personal level with something that's so iconic, that has such a history, such a presence in New York City. You know, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge, the Queensboro Bridge, the Williamsburg Bridge. These are things that you see all the time, you pass every day, and you think, you know, you have a relationship with it. And getting to get up close and personal is really neat. In specific, climbing a bridge is really interesting because you get a unique vantage point. You have two different separations from the city. You have the effect of being on an observation deck, of being high above the city. And, you know, the Empire State Building gets 2 million visitors a year. You don't have to explain the appeal of an observation deck to people. And then you also have the sense of a horizontal separation, where it's that same sense of, say, looking at Manhattan from across the East River in Williamsburg or in Long Island City. And you have both of those at once, and it's a really unique perspective and really cool. And especially if you're kind of all alone, you're on top of a bridge, you're extremely tenuously connected to the city. You're at the top of this narrow spire that's connected only by a narrow span to the shore. You have more room around you than anybody else in New York City. More than somebody in a Fifth Avenue penthouse, more than somebody wandering in Central Park, you just have this vastness of space. There's an amazing feeling of removal and connection at the same time. You look below you and you're standing on a narrow little platform of metal or stone, and yet you are intensely and electrically connected to the city. Once you've experienced it, you want to go back.
So you are alone on top of a bridge. You generally do that at night after dark?
Yes.
And you're not supposed to go up there, but you're able to just climb over the barrier and then you hike up the... How is it that you can physically climb to the top of one of these bridges?
So it's not for everybody. I want to stress that. It's for people who are comfortable with heights, who are comfortable with climbing, and who don't mind possibly getting arrested. I don't want to make this seem cavalier or casual. I want to stress that in urban exploration, we take risks. And taking risk is a luxury, and not everybody has that luxury.
Now, you mentioned three or four bridges, each of them not open to the public, and each of them actually open to urban adventurers who want to jump the barrier and climb up. Is that right? I would think they could just more effectively close it off so you physically couldn't get up there.
Well, that's easier said than done. It's not easy to scale many of these bridges. It is something for folks with a decent amount of athleticism and, like I said, a decent amount of risk averseness.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Moses Gates. He writes a book called Hidden Cities, taking us really all over the world on his adventures. Moses, who are these urban explorers? How would you describe them? And is there sort of a special camaraderie among you?
I'd say there's a little bit of a camaraderie, but urban explorers really are diverse. I want to say there's men, there's women, there's young folks, there's old folks, there's people from all over the world. And the really defining thread is that we're just really motivated to go where we want to go and see what we want to see and kind of willing to go that extra mile.
It's really ignoring do not enter signs and then being willing to pay the consequences. You have sort of a greater ethic that says, no, you can't say we can't do this. We're going to do it. But you do risk getting arrested.
That's true. That's the gist of it. I will say we all ignore rules that we think are dumb.
You talk about in your book three kinds of abandonment. I thought that was very interesting. When you think of American, well, cities in general, we're talking big cities. Review the three kinds of abandonment.
So there's three different kinds of abandonment in especially North American cities, and it really depends on the economic vitality of the city. In a city like New York, abandonment is actually kind of rare, which is why the things that are abandoned in New York often are very popular. You look at a place like 5 Beekman Street, and they're throwing events and things like that in there. In an economically powerful city, things don't become abandoned for long because there's money to be made by rehabbing them.
So generally, that's a transitional phase. They're going to tear down the building, but right now you've got a chance to go in there and explore.
Exactly.
Now talk about a deader city like Detroit or Buffalo or something like this.
So in a Detroit or a Buffalo or some of those old industrial cities that have experienced disinvestment and depopulation, there's more abandonment than you know what to do with in general. And it's simply a function of population decline. And in these places, it's pretty easy to go and check out, you know, abandoned buildings or factories or hospitals or things like that, because there's no economic value to most of them in a city that's still being depopulated and still has a great deal of disinvestment. And then there's something also in between, which is cities that are kind of on the upswing, but not quite New York or San Francisco or a place with hugely strong property values. And there, people are warehousing these a lot of times. And those are the toughest cities, actually, because a lot of times the abandonments are heavily sealed to protect that potential investment. They don't want people going in, taking metal pipes or trashing the place or doing anything like that.
Now, my niece is a street artist in New York. Her name is Nicolina, and she has climbed some of these bridges you're talking about.
I know Nicolina.
You know Nicolina, and she's an amazing spirit. And reading your book, I just felt like I was talking to my niece, and it's really a bunch of adventurous young souls that are really willing to embrace life and also deal with the consequences. And you write about the majesty of decay and the tenderness of rust and the joy of trespassing. Talk about the majesty of decay and the tenderness of rust.
Well, a lot of urban explorers start this hobby because they find a certain aesthetic in abandonments and abandoned buildings. And it's something that I don't disparage. I think that it can be interesting, but it's something that many people feel becomes fetishized. And you start to see websites with heavy use of phrases like the tenderness of decay and things like that. And it's something that I think is interesting, but I think has to be done respectfully. And you have to realize that these cities, no matter where in the world and no matter what challenges they face, are people's homes. And people are invested in their cities, and people generally love their hometown and want to see it improved and want to see it become vital. And to kind of fetishize the decay and the abandonment and things like that doesn't always come off respectfully.
You don't have much respect for a do not enter sign, but what ethics and what limits do you have? Can you go too far when it comes to respecting property or risking your personal safety? How do you measure that?
I think every urban explorer, and I want to stress this, every urban explorer follows their own personal set of ethics. We are all people who ignore rules that we think are dumb, and therefore, sometimes you have attempts to kind of make a code of ethics among urban explorers, which ends up being silly because then each particular urban explorer does the same thing they do with the law, which is they ignore the parts they think are dumb. So I would say that most urban explorers generally are very, I want to say, ethical folks. You know, we're not trying to do anything bad. We're appreciative of the urban environment. We're appreciative of our surroundings. And we really are trying to bring that appreciation to both ourselves and a larger audience. And I think that the folks who are ethically challenged, in a way, are the people who keep these amazing views and amazing pieces of history under wraps just for, you know, themselves or whoever they happen to know. I think public access is a very ethical thing. And I think the more public access, especially to municipal property, especially to city-owned public infrastructure, is ethical and important. And I think that it's best if it's done in a way that's safe and accessible to the widest amount of people. I mean, I love climbing bridges. I would love it if my grandmother were able to climb bridges also.
You urban explorers might be called the ACLU of open access for people in big cities.
I would not dispute that.
Moses Gates is our guide to the heights and the underworld of urban exploration right now on Travel with Rick Steves. His book, Hidden Cities, is a memoir of his unconventional travels. And the website mosesgates.com has more about the book and links to Moses' blog entries about his latest exploits. Moses, let's talk about Paris. I've just long been fascinated with underground Paris. They say that, you know, if you stretched all the sewers in Paris out in a straight line, they'd go all the way to Istanbul. You've got that huge underground dimension of Paris. Tell me the joys you've had as an urban adventurer in Paris.
The first time I went in the catacombs, it was the biggest paradigm shift of my entire life. I could not imagine that I was actually going to do that, that this place actually existed, that I was actually going to slide down this muddy embankment, walk through some abandoned train tracks, and quite literally crawl through a hole in the ground into this insane shadow world under Paris. I thought it was just this incredible pushing of my personal envelope. Now when I'm in Paris, going to the catacombs is the least big deal in the world. It's just part of my standard itinerary, like going walking along the Seine and going to see the Louvre. So Paris is, in terms of the underground, the most amazing city I have ever been to, and I will never get tired of it. You have a magnificent sewer system that was built in the 1800s that goes all underneath Paris, and you can walk through the large drains pretty easily, generally speaking. And then you also have the catacombs, and the catacombs are a series of old limestone and gypsum quarries, some of which date back to ancient Rome. What had happened was they were built on the outskirts of Paris when Paris was a smaller city. The city expands. They start to develop over all of these old quarries, and it's a problem. You build a house, the house falls in an old abandoned limestone quarry, it's no good. So back, and this is how old the catacombs are, back during the reign of Louis XVI, in the mid to late 1700s, 1770s, I believe, they commissioned an agency called the Inspection Générale Cattières. My French accent is horrible, I apologize. And they went around inspecting and stabilizing all of these old quarries. And the result is a comprehensive network. If you look at the map, it looks like a Dungeons and Dragons module. And the cataphiles, who are the people who like to explore the catacombs, have continually updated and made their own maps.
Just so our listeners understand, any tourist can go to the, quote, catacombs of Paris. And a couple hundred years ago, they decided the cemeteries in the city were a waste of land and not hygienic, so they unearthed all the cemeteries, and they respectfully stacked the bones under the streets in these old quarry tunnels that Moses is describing. And today, you can go down and see literally millions of skeletons and bones and skulls as you walk under the permissible catacombs. Is that your entry point, and then you just jump over a bunch of bones and find yourself in the more unvisited territory? Or how do you bridge the legal part of the catacombs with the wide open terrain?
So the legal part of the catacombs is about, I believe, a little under a mile in length. The catacombs themselves are about 200 miles in length. And when you have a network that big and you have the amount of people in Paris who like to explore it, you find ways in. Let's just put it like that.
People team up down there. You talk about a subterranean Times Square. You talk about spending the night underground.
So the Times Square of the catacombs is a term I completely made up. It is not, if you ask a cataphile about it, they won't know what you're talking about. But there is an area in the catacombs that is about a 20 or 30 minute walk from the most used entrance. That is this amazing place that's kind of the nerve center of the catacombs. It has several different rooms with astounding works of art that cover the entire caverns. We're talking sculptures, paintings, and in addition to that, it's also where a lot of people will meet up. You'll say, meet me in, one of the rooms is called La Plage. So you'll say, meet me in La Plage at 8 o'clock. And then you will go in a hole in the ground and wind your way through some tunnels and come around a bend. And you'll see this cavern covered in art with a bunch of French kids partying or something like that. That's a fairly common scene in the catacombs.
And do you carry a flashlight or do you wear a head torch or what do you do?
So if you're going in the catacombs, not just the catacombs, if you're going anywhere underground caving without natural light sources, mm-hmm. you should always take three light sources. So yes, I have a flashlight, a backup flashlight, and a backup flashlight. If you run out of light in the catacombs, you're kind of screwed.
Tell us about spending the night underground in Paris.
So sleeping in the catacombs is one of my favorite things to do. It's a great sleep because there's no light and no sound. You're dead to the world. What you have to do, though, is you have to bring a hammock. Most of the floor of the catacombs is rock, and if you try to sleep on it, even if you're in a sleeping bag, it'll feel like Harry Potter is getting his soul sucked out by a Dementor. It's just horrible. But if you manage to stay off of that, if you can sling a hammock, it's great. It's no light, no sound, very meditative. It's a little cold. The catacombs are constant 55 degrees with about 98% humidity. But it's, you know, if you have a good sleeping bag, it's not a problem. And it's one of the best sleeps you'll have of your life. Cataphiles have strung up a lot of hammock hooks.
You know, you can't help but think of movies about Charles Dickens, London and stuff, where you'd have all these scary, desperate, mean people with knives that roam around down there. Do you feel comfortable just from a personal safety point of view when you're underground in these cities?
I do personally. I've never run into a problem underground. I've never run into a problem in an abandoned building. I've never run into a problem with anyone I've met in any of these places. And I have met several people. Mm-hmm. I've met people in the catacombs. I've met people in the tunnels under New York. I've met people in abandoned buildings all over the world. And I've never felt threatened. If you are going to mug someone or want to do harm to someone, you're going to hang out in a place where you think people are going to go. And that place is not going to be a tunnel underneath in the ground or an abandoned building or something like that.
All right. Well, good luck and keep an eye open for my niece, Nicolina, as she's climbing those bridges. I hope she's okay. And thank you for sharing an amazing slice of the world that even the most enthusiastic traveler hardly ever considers. Once again, we've been talking with Moses Gates. His book is Hidden Cities, a memoir of urban exploration. Thanks, Moses. Take care.
No problem. I'll keep an eye on Nicolina. Don't worry.
That's good. Better have some fun. You ain't gonna live forever. Before you're old and gray, still okay. Have your little fun, son. Have your little fun. Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick. Thanks to the Radio Foundation in New York for studio help today. There's more online at ricksteves.com, including audio from the show that you can download to your smartphone or MP3 player. Look for the Audio Europe link at ricksteves.com. And while you're there, click on the Radio tab to get more details about each week's show, including web links to our guests. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.